This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of May 16th, 2021. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 186. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest. The Is It Just Me commentary. And did you know that 44% of people in Washington State are fully vaccinated against the coronavirus? In British Columbia, only 3%. Point Roberts, Washington Fire Chief Christopher Carlton joins me to discuss his proposal to welcome Canadians to his isolated community for their second dose. But first, he needs Prime Minister Justin Trudeau to give the green light. I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker. And the big deal feature, the BC NDP government's communications breakdown. It means too much spin and too much secrecy about the coronavirus pandemic. Hear highlights of the latest data scandal and how the Breaker.News has been sounding the alarm longer than anyone else. But first, is it just me? Is it just me, or could the differences between Canada and the United States be any more obvious at this time? Consider this a tale of two countries. From May 13th in Washington, D.C., President Joe Biden.
The Center for Disease Control and Prevention and the CDC announced that they are no longer recommending that fully vaccinated people need wear masks. This recommendation holds true whether you are inside or outside. I think it's a great milestone, a great day. It's been made possible by the extraordinary success we've had in vaccinating so many Americans so quickly. To date, we've given out 250 million shots in 114 days. And we're seeing the results. Cases are down in 49 of 50 states. New York Times has reported that hospitalizations are the lowest they've been since April of 2020, over a year ago, right after the start of the pandemic. Deaths are down 80%, and also at their lowest level since April of 2020.
From May 11th in Ottawa, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau.
We all want to have a summer where we can see our loved ones and invite friends over for barbecues. We can have that summer. We can have a one-dose summer. But for that, two things need to happen. First, restrictions need to remain in place until cases go way down with more screening, testing, and contact tracing. We need to successfully limit community transmission. Second, as Dr. Tam said, at least 75% of Canadians need to have received their first shots. And we need to keep ramping up those second doses. If we can do this, then we can have a more normal, better summer.
After the bumpy transition from the Trump administration to the Biden administration, the U.S. is on its way to herd immunity. In Canada, Trudeau is on a wing and a prayer, with his laughable one-dose summer catchphrase. He wanted a spring election, now he's still planning for a fall election. A one-dose summer is what he thinks can make a Trudeau's fall at the ballot box. An election is not required until fall 2023. But for the lust for more power, a Liberal majority, and the desire to limit the public's understanding of how poorly his government handled this crisis. Joining me on the Breaker.News podcast is Christopher Carlton. He's the fire chief in Point Roberts, Washington, which is right next door to Swanson, BC. It is isolated from the rest of the United States. It's a small community,
Residents of Point Roberts must drive through Delta and Surrey, BC to get to the Peace Arch Crossing to Blaine to get to the rest of Washington State and the rest of the United States by car. Point Roberts has also been hit hard economically by the closure of the border to leisure travel since March of 2020. This week, President Biden delivered the good news about the Centers for Disease Control recommendation, telling people who are fully vaccinated that they can take off their masks. The United States vaccination program has gone much faster than Canada's. Fire Chief Carlton, are people in Point Roberts on this sunny weekend taking off their masks?
Yes, we do see that around the community at this time. We also have some people that are holding on to the facial coverings just for a little while longer, I would suspect. But we have seen some businesses relax the requirements of masks, and we're moving in that direction.
What is the status of the vaccination program in Point Roberts? I've been watching the Washington State numbers and the Whatcom County numbers. They're obviously better than they are here in British Columbia. British Columbia government is trying to catch up, of course. We're getting more shipments in Canada. But the Washington State program has gone on pretty quickly. There is the worry in some parts of Washington State that demand is going down, even though supply is up, and there's being extra effort paid to try to get people in for those second shots. But how are things in Point Roberts specifically?
We're doing extremely well. I'm very proud of my community. And by the end of this weekend, tomorrow, we have another vaccination event for second doses. And I will have over 700 people in my community out of a projected 800 to 900 that are currently here. Seasonally high, we probably have around 4,000 to 5,000 people here at this point during the summer months. But because of the closure, we have a regular population of 800 to 900. We don't have our current 1,300 normal residents that live here year long, but that's gone down to about 800 to 900 again. So again, we're 700 plus fully vaccinated individuals. By June 7th, we'll add another 20 to 40 individuals to that. So we'll be around 750 individuals that are fully vaccinated through our clinic here. Now, that doesn't add in those individuals within my community that went south to get their vaccinations. And I'll be sending out an email to try to compile numbers on how many people didn't get vaccinated through our events here strictly at the fire district and actually went south and got vaccinated, so we can add those to our numbers.
Would you say that Point Roberts is at or near what we'd call herd immunity, just the overwhelming majority, to the point where the transmission chains can be broken?
With the numbers that we currently have, absolutely. We've reached that level.
That's impressive. And because you reached that level, and because the supplies are better south of the border than they are north of the border, you've made an interesting proposal. You've written an open letter to Prime Minister Trudeau and to Premier Horgan about welcoming Canadians to Point Roberts to get their shots. Tell me more about that proposal and how it's been received so far.
My proposal is to reach across the northern border and open up Point Roberts as a neutral location during this pandemic, because we're extremely protected, and our geographical isolation gives us an opportunity to do something that is harder to do across our 49th at other locations. If you come to Point Roberts in your vehicle, there's no place to go in your vehicle other than Point Roberts. And we're unlike, we don't have a car ferry that goes from here. We do have a foot ferry and we do have an airport, but coming in your vehicle allows you to realistically just go back into Canada when you're done with a vaccine event. So the extent that we've offered is to be able to be seen as a neutral location, be able to bring in dual citizens, American citizens that are living in the Lower Mainland, get them vaccinated either with their primary or secondary shot much quicker than what is being capable of right now in the Lower Mainland and in BC. Since we border BC, that's what I'm going to specifically speak of versus the country of Canada. And we would like to do that. So obviously they're American citizens, have dual capacity, and they're living in Canada, but we would like to extend our hand first and foremost to those citizens and bring them into Point Roberts, let them be here in their vehicle for under an hour and be able to return to Canada without having the restriction that is realistically prohibitive to saving lives That would be the 14-day quarantine on return, and also having the restriction of needing a negative COVID test when all they're doing is coming into Point Roberts, staying in their vehicles, coming in contact with a medical professional who's been fully vaccinated, wearing PPE, giving them a shot that takes less than 10 seconds, going into a staging location for 15 or 30 minutes to be watched for allergic reactions, and then returning to Canada. There shouldn't be the prohibitive nature of that restriction of having to quarantine just because you came basically 100 yards over the border into the United States, but stayed in your vehicle. That doesn't go along with trying to do as much as you can for your communities and saving the lives of not only members of your country, but also dual citizens and other citizens of other countries that are calling BC home at this point.
So far, where has the proposal gone? Have you heard back from any top officials?
No, I haven't heard anything back from anybody in British Columbia. I do know we've heard a little bit back from some of our elected officials here in Washington State that discussions are being taken at the governmental level with BC leaders and Washington State leaders. At the federal level, when it comes to Washington, D.C., I do believe there are some discussions that are happening. But obviously, you know, people say this is about saving lives, getting shots into arms. And for me, politically, you know, if they're worried about political fallout or their political position regarding this, you know, politically, if you serve the people, if you help people save their lives and have access, regardless of what country it's in or how to obtain that access to a vaccination, then in my mind, you win politically. And they'll maintain their vote in support of you. But if you're doing the opposite, then I would suspect that there's a chance that those voters would go to the polls in the next round and vote for somebody else that would have more of an inline capacity to follow what they're saying to the voices, and but their actions are not going along with their words.
So thanks for joining us on the Breaker.News podcast. Christopher Carlton, the fire chief in Point Roberts, thank you very much.
Thank you for your time today.
Meanwhile, Federal Ethics Commissioner Mario Dion ruled last week that Trudeau was not in conflict of interest during the We Charity scandal. He said the law does not include the appearance of conflict of interest, even though Trudeau himself admitted he should have recused himself from cabinet meetings about awarding a $900 million job training contract to the controversial charity connected to the Liberal Party. Democracy Watch co-founder Duff Conacher told the Breaker.News that he will appeal the finding.
The commissioner's decision is wrong, and hopefully the courts will overturn it, because otherwise it creates a very bad precedent that will allow politicians and government officials to take part in future decisions to hand out money to individuals and organizations that have close relationships with their families. The Ethics Commissioner ruling claimed that while Trudeau was in a strong appearance of a conflict of interest, that's not covered by the Conflict of Interest Act. Well, there are sections in the Conflict of Interest Act says that it's there to prevent all conflicts of interest. And it doesn't say only real or potential conflicts of interest. It says it's there to prevent conflicts of interest. That includes, according to the Federal Court of Appeal, the words conflict of interest include appearance of a conflict of interest.
What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim.
In Apple Daily, police officials' massage parlor scandal shows loopholes in internal integrity checks. The scandal involving a high-ranking Hong Kong police official's visit to an unlicensed massage parlor has revealed potential loopholes in the government's internal integrity checks for civil servants. Frederick Choi has been ordered to take leave while an internal investigation is underway. Choi joined the force in 1995. In Taiwan news, Taiwan Supreme Court confirms life sentence for dismemberment of Canadian. An Israeli-American will have to spend his life in prison for the gruesome murder of a Canadian over a drug-related dispute following a decision by the Supreme Court to reject his final appeal. Oren Shlomo Meyer lured Canadian Sanjay Ryan Ramgahan to a riverside park in Taipei before killing him, dismembering him and throwing his remains into the water in August 2018. Meyer, who officially worked as a tattoo artist, suspected that the Canadian had been working as a police informant. Two other Americans were jailed, along with Taiwanese-Canadian Wu Shan, for 6 months for helping Meyer. In ABC News Australia, Telstra fined $50 million over unconscionable treatment of indigenous phone plan customers. Telstra admitted to breaching consumer law last year. The penalty is the second largest fine ever imposed for breaching Australian consumer law. In many cases, multiple phone plans were sold to a single customer on the same day, and they then ran up thousands of dollars in data charges. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
In the Oregonian, MLB to PDX effort gets a boost with A's news, but now it needs a champion. The Oakland A's have received permission to explore a relocation should the crumbling plans for their latest ballpark continue to disintegrate. The list containing the names of the Portland Diamond Project's whale investors and billions in collective financial commitments was shared with Portland Mayor Ted Wheeler a couple of years ago. Wheeler added up $2.5 billion in financial commitments and told the Oregonian, quote, "They know what they're doing," end quote. In the Seattle Times, Seattle Mayor Jenny Durkin had phone set to keep texts only 30 days, her office says. Durkin's text messages are missing for a 10-month period that includes the Black Lives Matter protests of 2020. Text messages are public records subject to disclosure that generally must be retained under state law. Texts are also missing for another 8 officials, including Fire Chief Harold Scoggins and ex-Police Chief Carmen Best. There's nothing in state law that says you can automatically delete records after 30 days, said Toby Nixon, a Kirkland City Council member and President Emeritus of the Washington Coalition for Open Government. In Capital Daily, too close to home, bats across the island face a looming threat that has devastated bats elsewhere. Of all provinces and territories across Canada, BC has the most bat diversity, with 16 different identified species. Within the southern part of Vancouver Island, there are 9 species of bats. Experts say by 2026, little brown bats could be completely wiped out of eastern North America. White nose syndrome is the culprit. That's Cascadia Calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. Remember when BC Premier John Horgan said this on November 18th, 2020?
We're not hiding anything. We have been as transparent as any jurisdiction in North America on a daily basis for months, giving appropriate information to the public so they have an understanding of the risks of COVID-19 in British Columbia.
Well, what Horgan said was not true then, and it is definitely not true now. The BC NDP government promised to be transparent and promised to reform freedom of information laws when it came to power in 2017. It never did. The pandemic has shown the system is broken even worse than before. In the last week, leaks and a freedom of information request revealed high infection rates and low vaccination rates in Surrey, high transmission rates in Fraser Health Region schools, and outbreaks at seniors' care homes in Vancouver that were kept secret. The communication breakdown hit the news on May 6th when the Vancouver Sun received a leaked internal report by the BC Centre for Disease Control. Health Minister Adrian Dix disappeared rather than take questions from the press the next day. Instead of going in front of a camera, Dr. Bonnie Henry talked to reporters by phone, and she tried to spin her way out of the situation.
Those are working copies, if you will, and the vast majority of what's in those is released in various forms on a weekly basis. And we are releasing the things that other, more than what other provinces are releasing.
When the legislature returned on May 10th, BC Liberal leader Shirley Bond and BC Greens leader Sonia Firstenow grilled Horgan and Dix.
Oral questions by members.
Leader of the official opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, the opposition, the media, and most importantly, the public, have been calling for COVID-19 data transparency for months now. But the Premier not only ignored those requests, he in fact ridiculed the suggestions, and he pretended on a regular basis that we were the most transparent jurisdiction in Canada. We now know, thanks to a very embarrassing leak to the media, that those concerns about the lack of transparency are true. The Premier had information that British Columbians deserved to have, including neighbourhood-level cases, positivity and vaccination data. That information was withheld. So much for the promise of transparency. So can the Premier today explain why he chose to withhold information that British Columbians wanted and keep them in the dark despite his continual promises to be transparent?
Premier.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker, and I thank the Leader of the Opposition for her question. She will know that for almost 15 months now, the Public Health Office, Chief Public Health Officer, in coordination with the BC Centre for Disease Control, has been releasing daily information about infections in health authorities, hospitalization rates, impacts on pregnant individuals, and a whole host of other data. I believe that was trend-setting at the time, and as the member knows full well, we have more information today on immunizations because we are doing more immunizations than ever before. In fact, last week, 389,000 British Columbians registered to get immunized.
Leader of the Third Party.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker. Just further to this line of questionings about these reports that were released that provided substantially more information than what has consistently been released to the public. The reports contain information that scientists, the press, members in this chamber, and the public have asked for months, and these requests have been ignored. Trust is a two-way street. The public must trust the decisions being made by the government and the advice being given to them, and the government must trust the public by providing them with the information on what is informing those decisions and why. By failing to keep the public fully informed, the government also fails to keep the public fully engaged. Information is a signal of trust by government, and substantial data can help promote safe behavior, it can create community cohesion, and it can ensure that British Columbians adhere to the restrictions placed upon them by understanding why those restrictions are needed. My question, Honourable Speaker, is to the Minister of Health. Why has his ministry and this government chosen to keep the public underinformed when it comes to COVID-19?
Minister of Health.
Well, the member will know that the provincial health officer, myself, the deputy provincial health officer, the ministry have prepared hundreds of briefings, I believe about 200 public briefings, regular monthly modeling efforts, which we were the first in Canada to institute that have keep people informed about the trajectory of the pandemic. Weekly surveillance reports with detailed information by local health areas for months. And in the process, the member talks about informing a broad group of people that advise the BC CDC and advise the provincial health authority on the direction government should take and in the surveillance of the pandemic and the surveillance of the health of British Columbia. What this has meant is that we've made decisions with respect to immunization and respect to control of transmission of the virus that have focused on where people are most vulnerable. And you see this reflected in all of our immunization strategy from the beginning. I think our provincial health officials have done a very good job, and they will continue to provide, as they have through the pandemic, more and more information to the public as it becomes available to present. And that is what they are doing. I think that the provincial health officer is very committed to the idea of informing the public, and in fact has done so from the beginning of the pandemic through extraordinary efforts. And I support her in that and will continue to be available myself and accountable myself for the efforts we're making.
More than a year ago, the Breaker.News was sounding the alarm. Governments were using the pandemic to activate emergency powers, and it harmed the flow of public information. Sean Holman, professor of journalism at Mount Royal University in Calgary, was a guest on the Breaker.News podcast in March 2020.
We are in a democracy. We're not in a dictatorship, and governments need to recognize that. Governments need to involve people in the decision-making that is happening right now, as difficult as sometimes that may be. And the population deserves to know what their government knows, especially at a time of crisis, to evaluate whether or not their governments are making the right decisions for the safety of all.
Sean Holman also appeared before a parliamentary committee on access to information in June 2020. Highlights from that were also on the Breaker.News podcast. Holman made the case for stronger laws to force proactive disclosure and stronger laws to protect whistleblowers.
During an emergency, the need for information accelerates. That's because Canadians want to make the best possible decisions to keep themselves safe. And they also want to ensure governments and corporations are doing the same thing on their behalf, especially when it involves a significant expenditure of taxpayer dollars. The costs of not providing this information are severe in the post-truth era we find ourselves living in. And that's because if there is an information gap, there's a substantial risk it will be filled with misinformation and disinformation. The government of Canada has in some ways tried to provide such information, but in other ways, there are numerous documented instances where it has failed to do so. And because of our broken access to information system, there is no easy or quick means for Canadians to challenge these refusals and obtain records or data the government won't voluntarily disclose, which was the whole entire point behind the Access to Information Act in the first place. That's why the Canadian COVID-19 Accountability Group has recommended the government be legally required to proactively release a number of broad categories of unredacted records within 15 days of them being prepared, including health and safety inspection reports, public health research, and government contracts. We are also recommending major reforms to Canada's whistleblower law, as this committee has done in the past. Last month, we saw how it took Canadian soldiers to blow the whistle on deplorable conditions in Ontario nursing homes. At the time, Premier Ford said that was because you find cracks in the system by living the system around the clock every single day. And in making that statement, he has eloquently articulated why we need to better protect public and private employees who see wrongdoing in their workplaces. We recognize that such reforms, which should include financial protection for whistleblowers, will take time. And that's why we're calling on the government to publicly declare that it will protect anyone who reports public and private sector wrongdoing related to the crisis. And we further recommend the creation of a COVID-19 ombudsperson who can provide advice and support for these whistleblowers. Canada's Access to Information Act currently ranks 57th compared to 127 other similar laws around the world. Its Public Servants Disclosure Protection Act has been criticized for being in violation of international best practices. It shouldn't take the COVID-19 crisis to change this. However, if it does, such reforms will help preserve evidence-based democratic decision-making at a time when it is under threat. And I would urge the members of this committee to take immediate action on this very important issue.
What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news.
I had to have this talk with you. Humanity depends on you. For the love of God, go get your damn vaccine.
That's the sound of the YVR Pop Choir, also known as the Chorus Studio, with its topical take on Dolly Parton's Maxine, called Vaccine. You can find it on YouTube.
The Virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to reporters who cover local government. It is Local Government Awareness Week in British Columbia until May 22nd. City Council, School Board, Parks Board, the level of government closest to you. A tip of the hat to the reporters who keep an eye on the politicians and bureaucrats and the decisions that they make. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca.
So I'm very happy that I'm going to get my Moderna shot today. And I wanted to tell everybody, I think you should get out there and do it too. I even changed one of my songs to fit the occasion. It goes, vaccine, 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 vaccine. I'm begging of you, please don't hesitate. Vaccine, 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 vaccine. Because once you're dead, then that's a bit too late. I know I'm trying to be funny now, but I'm dead serious about the vaccine. I think we all want to get back to normal, whatever that is, and that would be a great shot in the arm, wouldn't it?
Those are the sounds of country music legend and actress Dolly Parton on Twitter. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for May 16th, 2021. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on May 16th in 1982, at the Pacific Coliseum in Vancouver, the host Canucks fell 3-1 to the New York Islanders? The Islanders won the Stanley Cup in four straight games. It was also the first time I touched the Stanley Cup at the Hotel Vancouver before the game. Now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit TheBreaker.News on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/TheBreakerNews. That's patreon.com/TheBreakerNews. Until next week.